Annika Sorenstam joins us on Sports Byline, the Hall of Fame golfer, and she is regarded as one of the best female golfers in history. And before stepping away from competitive golf, she had won 90 international pro tournaments, making her the winningest female golfer. She also won 72 LPGA tournaments, including 10 majors and 18 other tournaments internationally. And she tops the LPGA's career money list with earnings of over $22 million. That's over $2 million ahead of her nearest rival while playing 149 fewer events. And she won a record 8 Player of the Year awards and is the only female golfer to shoot a 59 in competition. Annika, let's go back to where it all started. Bro, Sweden. It's a small little town. Tell me about growing up there.
Yes, you're right. It's a very, very small little town outside Stockholm on the west side. My parents were, golfers. They started early. As a matter of fact, my mom, she takes credit for some of my success because I was in her belly when she started to play. So she told me I felt the rhythm really early. So golf wasn't something that I wanted to do. You know, when I was young, I was more into soccer. I played a lot of tennis. I did downhill skiing, et cetera. And, golf was something I thought was for old people. So I would go out there and, get ice cream and sit on the golf cart and the pool cart. So I was introduced early, but really didn't catch on until a little later. So very sporty family. My sister also played the similar sports I did. So it was a nice upbringing.
Yeah, was there any sibling rivalry between you and Charlotta?
I would say so. Yeah, we're both very competitive. I like to say it was a friendly one. But we're very competitive. Both our parents are competitive. I mean, so if we played cards or Yahtzee or anything like that, we would be, there would be some cards flying around, a little anger here and there. But looking back at it, I think, it was fun. It made us, focused. It made us, just have fun doing it too. So we have similar interests and obviously both ended up playing on the LPGA and so it turned out okay.
You mentioned about being an all-around athlete. You certainly were a nationally ranked junior tennis player. You played for the hometown soccer team. And as you mentioned, also a very good skier. When you gravitated to golf, was that hard to do when you take a look at the other sports that you were involved in? One takes a lot of patience and there's a lot of downtime. In the other one, there isn't much downtime at all.
It was. I mean, I think what happened is I competed in tennis for 8 years and I really didn't get anywhere. I had a weak backhand that, just wasn't my strong suit and my opponents noticed it right away. So I just didn't get anywhere in tennis. I think eventually I kind of realized that this was not my thing and I had started to play golf and I really enjoyed practicing. I enjoyed being out there, in the sunset putting, or I enjoyed being there early in the morning hitting balls. And I felt like in tennis, you're obviously very dependent on your opponent, whether you're just practicing or you're competing with somebody. But in golf, I felt like I can go out there and just work on my swing. If I want to hit the draw, I can play a draw. And if I wanted to do this, I could do all those things. So it was, I think that's why I liked it. And also, it was so tough. Golf is a tough sport. As you all know, I mean, you feel like one day you have it and the next day you wonder where it went. And I wanted to figure it out. I wanted to, understand why I couldn't be consistent. I wanted to figure out how to hit that flop shot and then, different lies every time and then different conditions. And it was just, I was intrigued by the sport early. And then when I didn't have the other sports, I could spend more time on the golf course. And I think, the more I played, the more I loved it.
You bring up something very interesting. I thought about this one time when I was covering a golf tournament, and that is the fact you're playing the same course for 4 days. And yet, as you pointed out, one day you could shoot 6 under par. The next day you could be 3 over par. What is the difference between that?
Yes, it's a very good question. It's just interesting. We feel like, every day should be very similar. But, some days we wake up and you're not always on the right side of the bed. And, the way I compare it to is you get in a car and sometimes you drive and you get stopped at every red light. And some days you just keep on going. It's green. So with golf, it's just, I think that's what I like about it. It's just every day is different, whether the wind is turning a little bit or, you know, maybe you had some rain overnight, the greens are a little slower, and it's just, you have to learn how to adapt and adjust every single day, and I think that that's what I like about it. It's the challenge, you know, it's always something new, and the way that we, our bodies feel, and the feel that we have, and so, you know, that was my goal, to be a consistent player, trying to figure out how can I, you know, repeat my swing, and obviously making sure I had the same warm-up routine and pre-shot routine, to trying to get in the same frame of mind so that I would perform more consistently. But that's what makes golf, I think, could be, you know, frustrating for some, but also what makes people come back to the game is they hit that wonderful shot, and then they go, they know they have it, and then they just want to do it again. So it's that constant seeking of hitting it again.
I know I tried golf once, and I gave it up, and I'll tell you the reason why. I'm a tennis player. I know when I make a mistake in tennis, 5 seconds later, I can forget about it. If I did it in golf, I had all the time I was looking for the mistake.
That is true. I mean, that's, you know, in golf, as you know, in tennis, as you know, it's more you're reacting. The ball is coming over pretty fast, and it's just, you know, take the racket back and swing at it. In golf, you might have to walk 200 yards to find it, and during those 200-yard walk, you have time to think, you know, think about all kinds of stuff. So, again, I think that's what made it so interesting is, you know, you want to think in golf, but you need to think at the right time and obviously have the right thoughts.
Yeah, that's another thing, too. The mind can be a very bad enemy for you, can it not? If you make a bad shot, you got all the time walking down to that shot. Do you have to keep it simple?
Well, I mean, in a perfect world, yes. I mean, it's easier said than done, you know, because when I think in golf, you know, we have a tendency to complicate things. You want to do it right. And then you think about all those thoughts and, you know, whether it's the swing, you know, the grip, the backswing, you know, the impact, the follow through. And then you look at target and all these things. I think what's the hardest part with golf is compared to tennis is, you know, you, like you said, you can move on, but in golf, you have to continue to count that shot. If you hit a bad shot out of bounds, you know, you carry that shot on for like 4 days in a tournament. So, you know, it's like, you really have to learn how to forget bad shots. Remember good ones, forget about bad ones. And it's not that easy. You know, you go to, you know, let's say the seventh hole and you didn't do so well on number three. It's easy just to kind of keep carrying that on and thinking about that bad pot or bad, instead of just trying to, you know, put it aside and move on. So I think that's another thing that you learn the more you play, and especially when you're at a higher level, you have to do that. You know, I keep telling the young girls that I mentor, you know, I've never hit a bad shot in my life because I don't want to remember it. You know, you quickly think of it, and then you make an adjustment, and then, you know, time to move on. There's just no time to carry excess, you know, bad shot in your bag.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. Anytime I've talked to any of the professional athletes, whether it be football, I know John Elway told me one time the best thing you can do is forget the last thing that you did if it wasn't a good thing. And also when it comes to closers in baseball, they have to have a short memory as well. So it's interesting to hear you say the same thing about golf. Is it true when you were 12, you shared your first set of golf clubs with your sister? You got the odd number clubs and Charlotta got the even ones?
Yeah, that is true. So I think it might even been a few years later, but that's when my dad realized that we had, you know, started an interest in golf, and he wanted to make sure we had some decent equipment. So he bought one set and just split it up. So because, you know, and I really, you know, I look at kids nowadays. I mean, it's good to have half a set or, you know, because that makes you a little more creative, you know. And I remember having the odds. If I needed to hit a six, it's like, okay, do I hit the seven a little extra, or do I hit this five a little softer? You know, you have to kind of maneuver a little bit, work the ball. And, you know, nowadays you really don't see that much because you just grab a six and you hit it. So, you know, it made me a little bit more creative on the course. And you know, at that age, I really didn't think of it any differently. It was just, it was kind of fun. You know, this is what you do. You turn it, you open it up, or you close it, or whatever you want to do to make it what you didn't have.
We have about a minute before we have to break, but what was the greatest asset you had, Annika, on the course?
Other than support from my parents, I most likely would say it's my mind, you know, the mental aspect of the game. I like to say it was my 15th club.
Also, I think about Sweden and also the way Swedish people, I have some friends over in Stockholm, and I remember talking to them one night, and I was always caught up by the fact that they were very methodical in the way they thought, and I always thought that that probably would help you when it came to golf as well. Am I correct in that observation?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's maybe it has to do a little bit with the personality, and you know, my dad worked for IBM for 25 years, so I was I kind of had his strategic thinking, you know, planning, organizing a little bit. And, you know, he sent me to computer camps some summers. And, you know, I wanted to be outside. And here I was sitting inside programming, right? Because at that time, you know, they really didn't have the software. You have to write your own software. They had the hardware and we had to write then. And I was sitting in there thinking, oh, this is not really what I want to do. But I learned early on how to write them. And so I created my own golf statistical program. So I guess I used it later when I did play, so it did work out. But so I guess I have that little mind for numbers and planning, and I still analyze my game when I do go out.
Hall of Fame golfer Annika Sörenstam is with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about that mother-daughter relationship, because she mentioned about her mother being a golfer as well. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. We're talking golf with Annika Sörenstam, the Hall of Fame golfer, and as I pointed out a little bit earlier, she is regarded as one of the best female golfers in the world. Let's talk about your mom a little bit. I know you two were in a daughter-mother golf tournament, and you finished second in that tournament. Tell me a little bit about that relationship, because I always, you know, they talk about fathers and daughters, fathers and sons, but tell me about the relationship you had with your mother.
Yeah, no, I think I have a great relationship with my mother. And as a matter of fact, I was just talking to her before I got on the phone with you. And, you know, obviously very instrumental in my career as much as my dad. They're both, you know, very competitive. My mom was actually the club champion a few times. So, you know, she has that competitive mind. And in Sweden, we have different Swedish championships. And one of them is for mother-daughter. So when I got to an age where I was able to compete, you know, she wanted to play with me. And you know, it was a highlight. I know for a fact it was a highlight of hers, and I can see why, because I have a daughter now, and if I would play with her, I would think that that would be a highlight. And, you know, she will get out her best outfits and her best head covers, and, I mean, this was like a big deal, and it's an alternate shot type of format. And, you know, at the time I was, you know, I think I had surpassed her in handicaps. It was, you know, I was kind of helping her a little bit. And in the quick story, we were, I don't know which hole we were, but we were around the greens and I had missed the green and she had to chip. And she said, Annika, what club should I use? And I was, you know, analyzing the situation. I said, well, how about you take a 7 and bump and run? And she goes, no, I can't bump and run. I said, okay, well, how about you take a pitching wedge and then, you know, kind of land it here a little bit in the air and do that. No, I don't like my pitching wedge. And I looked at her and said, why are you asking me? She ended up taking the putter and did more of a bump and run, and it turned out beautifully. So I will never forget. It was great. Like you said, we finished second, and, you know, that was kind of a silver medal. So great, you know, as everybody knows to play golf, you know, being with your family on the golf course, the bonding, you know, the relationships, the memories that you build, it's just something very special. So, you know, I will always cherish that. And, you know, fast forward, obviously now when I have my own children, and we will still play golf together. We go and play 3 generations, and sometimes, you know, the girls play against the boys, so it'd be my son and my dad and my husband against my daughter and myself and my mom. So it's such a fun thing, you know, to do. Obviously, we're all different levels, all different ages, but, you know, I can't think of any other sport where you can really do that and have a good time.
What's the best piece of advice she ever gave you about golf?
My mom has been very, you know, supportive in a lot of ways. That, you know, there are a few things I, you know, remember. I was you know, I had just received a scholarship from University of Arizona, and I was going to leave Sweden. So I'm 19 years old, and she's dropping me off at Stockholm Airport, and, you know, it's quite a flight ahead, and I got two suitcases and a golf bag, and it was a big moment. And, you know, she gave me a hug and said, well, you know, we certainly would miss you, but keep in mind it's equally as long back as it is going there. So I knew that I can come back at any time. They would be there, and they would support me through my journey. And just knowing that, you know, having that comfort, knowing that they were there and let me explore, but, you know, if it doesn't turn out, you know, they will be here when I come back. So I think just the unconditional love. And I mean, think of all the times that they drove us, my sister and, you know, drove me to these tennis tournaments where it'd be like, we would lose 6-0, 6-1, you know, that was just, they didn't say much, but it's in the car. And we all know that, you know, maybe the future wasn't there, but they kept driving us every weekend. And then, you know, but my dad has also been very instrumental in giving me some advice. So it's good to know that they've always been there in support. And, you know, now as a parent, you see what really the investment they do. Now you really start appreciating them a little bit more, I guess, because when you're younger, you just kind of take it for granted. Because now we drive around our kids and you're like, wow, did they do this literally every weekend?
Do you remember that aha moment when you realized, Annika, that you could play golf at a high and successful level?
I do. I mean, I was 16 years old, and I had just lost another tennis match. And, you know, because, you know, in tennis, you always, if you're not seeded, which I wasn't, I always got to play the seeded players. And they were always the best, of course. That's why they're seeded. So it was really a short. And I realized that this is not going to do it for me. And I was playing a junior golf tournament at my home club, and you know, it was stable for it at that time, so I had 40 points and I beat my competitors by quite a bit. And even though it was handicapped, I just realized, you know what, I think, you know, first of all, this is more fun and number two is I think I have a lot more potential here. And you know, tennis was just very, you know, I got really frustrated, and golf, I was looking at more at opportunities, you know, like, oh, I can do this, wow, this is fun. And golf, I mean, tennis, it was more like, you know, I don't even know how to look at this anymore. So, yeah, I remember quite clearly, and I remember telling my dad, I said, you know what, I'm just going to put my tennis racket on the shelf, and I just want to play golf. And he said, okay, let's do it.
And early in an important decision in your life and career was to move to the United States and go to the University of Arizona for a couple of years. How did you come to that decision?
Well, it was quite funny, actually. I was enrolled in the Stockholm University, and they had a college tournament in Japan, of all places. So I went over there and represented Sweden, and they had a few college teams from the United States. I remember Arizona, the women's team was there, of course, and then they had a team from Texas and Clemson. There was a few, and that was the first time I was introduced to college golf. And I was paired with one of the girls from University of Arizona, and she was super sweet. We had a great conversation, and she introduced me to the coach after the round and said, hey, coach, I'd like you to meet Annika. She, you know, she has, I think she'd be great, you know, with our team or something like that. And so I met her, and you know, she said, I will send you some information. Look into what it's like. I didn't know anything about NCAAs. I really didn't know where Arizona was. I didn't know where Tucson. And I got home, and I remember, you know, my parents said, how was your trip? I said, it was great. I said, I think I'm going to go and play college golf. And they're like, what? And then I got, you know, papers in the mail, and this was like in September. And then, so I did all the SAT tests and all the things you need to do to prepare. And then August following year, I was in the plane to Tucson. So I wasn't really looking around. I really wasn't recruited, or I didn't really try. It sounded great. The coach was nice. The players had a good time. And I said, why not? So yeah, it was kind of like a last minute, if you know what I mean. And then it turned out to be, you know, perfect.
Annika won 7 collegiate titles, and in 1991, she became the first non-American and first freshman to win the individual NCAA Division I championship. Golf is such an individual sport. Playing it in a team concept, how was that for you? What did you learn from that maybe helped you along the way down the road in your career?
You know, I loved it. I really did. Like you said, it's an individual sport, and I played tennis as also an individual sport. But I did, you know, I did like soccer, and, you know, having teammates, having that support, having the camaraderie, you know, having the kind of the cheering on from each other. So when you play college golf, it's a little bit of a combination of both, you know, because you play as an individual, but then you also add up your team score. And so you cheer for each other and you travel together. So I loved it. I thought it was great. I really did. And obviously for me, it was, you know, coming to Arizona, play golf all year round, because in Sweden, you know, from November to maybe March, you know, there's no golf outside. So all of a sudden I was playing beautiful courses, practice facilities was, you know, fantastic. I had great competition and friendly teammates. So, I mean, it was a win-win situation, and I liked it. I mean, I made the team, you know, the first tournament, and it was just it was obviously nice to get a chance to travel. I mean, I traveled, you know, to different states to play against other teams, and it was a wonderful experience. And then, of course, learning a different language and growing up, you know, living in a dorm and being away, and it was a great preparation, you know, for the future.
We have about a minute left before we have to break again. Another big decision in your life and career was you turned pro in 1992. What was the most important factor in making that decision, Annika?
Well, I felt like, you know, I was ready. I had, you know, I was an older, I went to college a year older than others because the school system in Sweden is a little different. And, you know, I had studied to be a chemical engineer in Sweden. And then when I came to the U.S., I felt like I had to start over with a lot of 101 classes. And I felt like, you know, I'm not really getting anywhere. And my golf was getting quite good. And you know, I was inspired by the LPGA when they came to town to watch them. And I started to dream about, you know, life as a professional. And after 2 years, you know, like you said, I'd done quite well as a college player. So I decided that, you know, I was going to take a break and give it a try. And so it was more just looking forward and thinking, you know, this is what I want to try now. And if it doesn't work out, I can always, you know, get my degree or my chemical engineering back and see if I want to do something there. So luckily I haven't looked back. It turned out okay.
Yeah, Annika's first professional win came in 1994, the Holden Women's Australian Open on the ALPG Tour, and we'll talk about that and also about her foundation as we continue on Sports Byline. Annika Sorenstam is with us on Sports Byline. She won 72 LPGA tournaments, including 10 majors and 18 other tournaments internationally. She also tops the LPGA's career money list with earnings with over $22 million, and she won a record 8 Player of the Year awards. In the United States, Annika, you were the LPGA Rookie of the Year. You had 3 top 10 finishes, including a tie for second at the Women's British Open, and made your Solheim Cup debut. But the year that was really important was your breakout year in 1995, when you won your first LPGA Tour title at the U.S. Women's Open. What was it about that year, as you look back on it and reflect, that made it so successful for you?
Well, this was, as you mentioned, I had, you know, had 1 year of learning, 1 year of getting some experiences and getting comfortable with life, you know, life on tour and the experiences. I think, you know, just looking back, I mean, it was such an important year for me in the sense that, you know, it gave me the confidence. It gave me, you know, the belief in myself that, first of all, I'd made the right decision to be a professional and that I was capable of winning out on tour. So as we know in golf, it's so important to have the confidence. And, you know, and then it was interesting that it was the U.S. Open, a major of all tournaments. I mean, I had dreamed about winning U.S. Open, but it's been in tennis, and here it was in golf. And, you know, I was totally, you know, I was really, I came into that tournament under the radar. And I just, we played them in Colorado Springs, and at the Broadmoor, a beautiful golf course, and just fell in love with the golf course right away. And my game was good at, you know, that week. And it just turned out, you know, to be so, so exciting and so successful for me. And I just still look back at that as probably one of my most important wins for all those reasons.
Is confidence a contagious sort of thing?
I think so. I mean, it's the belief, you know, standing over a shot, it doesn't matter if it's a driver or a putt, just knowing that you can do it, you know, seeing the lines and seeing the positive results and then, you know, be able to relax and trust yourself. And I think, you know, in golf, I mean, they say the longest distance is between your ears. So, you know, if you start doubting yourself, if you're having negative thoughts and if you don't believe in your, you know, your ability, gets really, really, you know, you get tight and you just really don't, you kind of guide the shots and you kind of force it rather than just kind of let it happen. And that's what happened to me. I went out there and I trusted myself. But, you know, at that time, I also knew that, you know, this was not my full potential. I mean, I was only, you know, year two on the tour and I was 24 and I felt like, you know, I have a great journey ahead of myself and I know what I got to work on. I got to do this. I got to do this. And so I felt, wow, if I can win now, then, you know, that made me even more excited about, you know, the potential in the future of improving and having a chance to, you know, be able to do it again.
Throughout the rest of the 90s, you certainly had great success. But when you go on to the 2000s, I was interested in a comment you made. You said, at this point in your career, you said you lost focus having reached your biggest goals. Explain that a little more to me.
Sure. I was, you know, I've always been a goal setter. I've always enjoyed, you know, planning my season or thinking ahead what I want to achieve and what was important to me. And that would be my driving force, knowing that this would be important, whether it was, you know, playing well in college tournaments or just, you know, increasing my distance or different, you know, short-term goals. And then eventually the long-term goals will be to win on the LPGA. And then what happened was I won more than I ever thought I could. I was, you know, I kept working hard. I pushed myself and had a lot of confidence, and then I won some more. And it was just, obviously it was a lot of fun. But eventually I came to a point where I was pushing myself so hard. And then it was some of these goals that they didn't come naturally anymore. You know, I woke up and, okay, it would be nice to win a major, but I'd already won a major. And then it was, you know, it would be nice to win 5 times this season. And then I won 10 and I won 13 and 11. And then I felt, you know, the pressure of performing every single year. I mean, I remember in towards the end of my career, and, you know, how do you start the season? If you don't win 13 tournaments, you're having a bad year. It just, you know, it was exhausting thinking like that. And so I was forcing my goals, and I realized that, you know, goal is something that needs to come from the heart, you know, something that really motivates you to go out there, you know, through thick and thin, whether it's, you know, raining or sunny or windy. You know, but when the goals really don't matter, I kind of lost my motivation. And I think that started to be more clear that, you know, I wasn't as hungry anymore. It wasn't that important anymore. And my thoughts were elsewhere. I wanted to do other things. You know, I started an interest in my foundation, golf course design, to mention a few things. And that kind of took my focus away from practicing and competing.
Let me ask you about a couple other aspects of your career. You still managed to win more LPGA tournaments than any other player in the 90s. And then during 2001, you had 8 LPGA wins. You became the only female golfer to shoot a 59 in competition. Now, I've heard about being in the zone, but explain to me what that round of 59 was truly like for you as a professional golfer.
Well, it was, I mean, of course, it was an exceptional day. And, you know, growing up in Sweden and the Swedish national team, we had created this Vision 54. And what that meant was, you know, you can birdie every hole because if par is 72, you make 18 birdies. It's now 54. So, you know, it was like just thinking, you know, hitting fairways, hitting greens, one putt. And I know I can do it. You know, I've done it many times. Not necessarily in one round, but if you play the same course over and over, you know, I had birdie every hole. So the thought was, why can't I do it in one day? Because every hole is, you know, birdieable. It's possible. So obviously it's a mindset. So when I came into, you know, Phoenix, it was called the Standard Register Ping. It was March, and it was a Friday. And I had at a morning tea time, I was starting on the back nine, and I was rushing a little bit because I got a little delayed leaving the house. And so it was a quick warm up, but I got off to a really good start. I birdied the first one and kind of wound it down. And then I made a ton of birdies. And it was just one of those days where it just, you know, obviously I hit 18 greens. So I had a lot of birdie opportunities. There was really no missed hitting shots. But, you know, I looked at the hole and I saw the line. I committed to it and I did it. And, you know, I was in that zone, as you mentioned. It felt so easy. You know, I never second-guessed. I never thought about the consequences. I looked at it. I, you know, had a plan, and I did it. I committed to it. And it was just, I mean, I still look back and like, wow, that felt so easy. Why can't I do that again? You know, I've hit 18 greens in regulation before, but not been able to finish, you know, the way I did that day. But it was certainly a really cool experience. And just the other day, we celebrated 20 years of anniversary of shooting 59. So some things I remember clearly and some things I don't, because I was in that zone.
Let me ask you about 2003 and the men's PGA event that you decided to play. You were invited to play in the PGA Tour's Bank of America Colonial Golf Tournament, becoming the first woman to play in a PGA Tour men's event since Babe Zaharias back in 1945 at the Los Angeles Open. What motivated you to play in that men's tournament?
Well, I had been number one in the world for a few years, actually since 2000. And I was looking for ways to get better. I kept pushing myself. There was a part of me that believed I still could get a little better. I hadn't really reached my full potential. So I was looking at ways. I was practicing with some of the men on the PGA Tour because I lived in Orlando and there was, you know, quite a few of them in the neighborhood. So, growing up, I did play with the boys at my club. So it wasn't that, big of a deal. But then, I got to practice with Tiger and some of his friends, and it just pushed me a little extra, made me want to be better, whether I worked harder in the gym or. And then when this opportunity came about, I thought this would be great because now I can really see what I'm made out of and see if I can handle the spotlight and the pressure that kind of comes with it. And so I did get that opportunity. In January, I was asked at a press conference if I wanted to do it. And then in May, I decided before that, but I ended up playing in the Bank of America Colonial, Dallas, Texas. And it was just incredible experience looking back, probably one of the highlights of my whole career.
I know, and talking to the late Byron Nelson, I asked him about that great year he had, and I think it was 1945 when he won so many tournaments, and he could tell me every shot he made during that season and probably over his entire career. And so with that in mind, when you look back on your career and all the shots you made, is there one that really means a lot to you and brings a smile to your face, Annika?
I would say that the tee shot at the Colonial that day brings a smile to my face, but also just how monumental it was. I mean, I had prepared for 4 months and there was a lot of attention to this tournament. I mean, it was the first time in 58 years that a woman had played with the men. So, of course there were some critics and some people didn't understand, why is she doing this? And, she's hurting women's golf, hurting, women's sports. And then the other side was, this is great for golf. And, I had players reach out, want to play practice rounds and, just, so, it was an interesting moment, but for all the anticipation, standing on that first tee, just, putting the ball, putting the tee in the ground, the ball on the tee and kind of focus. And I mean, I was ready. I mean, I had practiced so hard and it was just, okay, let's just get this going. Let's get this over with and enjoy the moment. And I remember making good contact and the ball just probably one of my longest forwards I've ever hit because of the adrenaline and split the fairway and off I went.
One of the things, of course, now that you're retired is that you've gotten into other aspects and you have the Annika Foundation. And this is really an important foundation. It gives back. You host 6 international junior events and you incorporate a more than golf theme to teach the players about fitness, nutrition, media, giving back, etc. Tell me a little bit about this foundation.
I would love to. Thank you. The foundation, this is our 13th year. So, I feel like we have been able to do quite a few things the last few years to inspire the next generation. But it really started with, the end of my career. I knew that at some point it's going to come to an end. And what can I do? What's important? And, what's important to me was to be able to say thank you to golf. And what can I do to inspire other young girls to play this wonderful game and to, follow their dreams like that I've been doing. So, we wanted to create golf tournaments. I wanted to do things that I had done. So I wanted, being an international player, I wanted international tournaments, high-end, quality tournaments. We wanted to make these girls feel special. We wanted to have the best players there, good courses. And so we started in the U.S., and then within the national field, it became evident that, we were going to have tournaments a lot of different places. So today, we now have in China, we now have in New Zealand, we now have in Argentina, and we now have one in Europe, and then we have a college event. So we do have a nice global presence for young girls to fulfill their dreams. So we have become a recruiting spot for many college golfer coaches so that players from overseas can get a chance to utilize all these scholarships that are available. We have had, every year we would have over 600 girls participate in our events, and many of them are all now on the LPGA, and several hundred are now playing the Symetra Tour, and we give out an award every year called the Annika Award, presented by Stiefel, to the best collegiate Division I female player, just to celebrate their success and encourage young girls to take that path. So it's been tremendous. You know, I love doing it. Obviously, with these times, COVID times, we're a little restricted like everybody else, but, you know, our enthusiasm and my goals haven't changed. You know, once things started to open up, we're going to continue that. We, you know, we do some virtual things now, but, you know, we've been able to, all these young girls, whether they're from, you know, Peru or South Africa or, you know, Japan, to go through our events and, you know, the Augusta National Women's Amateur, which is one of the biggest amateur tournaments. We're literally going to have, you know, 70 out of the 72 players that played in any of the Amica initiatives. So we're super proud of that, continue to work with them. You know, whether it's, you know, it's not just about, you know, making these professionals. It's about building a great platform for them for the future, you know, help them with confidence, make, you know, life decisions and prepare them for what's next. And, you know, I mentor some of these girls through these programs. Have been fun just to be able to share my knowledge and my passion for the game. And, yeah, it's my way to say thanks.
Annika, I want to thank you for your time. This has really been special for me as well, watching you, covering your career as well. But not only for what you did for golf, but for women as well and what you're doing with your foundation. You're welcome here anytime. Please come back and join us again on Sports Byline.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Annika Sorenstam, the Hall of Fame golfer and regarded as one of the best female golfers in the world. We continue across the country and around the world with you on Sports Byline.